Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Islam Exposed with your fellow hosts, Tim Burke, Dave Milner, and I'm Kel Fritzy. And today we are remembering September 11th, 2001, and what happened that day. We don't need to apprise our smart listeners too much about what happened on that morning in New York City and Washington, D.C., and Shanksville, Pennsylvania. We saw the end devastation and what the enemy is capable of doing and continue to be capable of doing to this day. But I do want to give a special mention to the beautiful Colleen Gray, and that was her dulcet tones that you heard opening up the show. I'm not only proud to know Colleen Gray, but she has given me permission to use all of her material on any endeavor that I use on either it be Red Fox Blogger or Radio Jihad Network. She's a lovely lady. She's a composer, singer. She is a highly thought out. But like I say, she's also my friend. So thank you, Colleen, very much for allowing me to play your music on my humble radio shows. But we know what happened on September 11th. I do have a synopsis. I will relate that. But I want to bring on the fellow host. And first, I would like to say hello to Tim. Hi, Tim.
Well, good evening, Kellen. How the devil are you this evening?
Not as infidelity fine. Kind of sad.
Yeah, okay. I guess we're all feeling that way. But it's good to be on the show tonight, and I'd like to say thanks for putting the show together, and thank you to everybody who's currently listening in.
Absolutely. And we've got Dave with us here, too. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Kel, and hi, Tim. Yeah, I'd like to echo what Tim is saying here, Kel. You know, thank you for putting this show together. You pulled a lot of the weight on this, and we're going to help you out as much as we can. Not feeling as jaunty as I normally would here at Energy Hot Hot Quarters in Burlington, Vermont, but am definitely feeling a sense of pride in our nation and in the way we came together on that day. And looking forward to this episode of Islam Exposed. Back to you.
I want to give people, you know, like I said, just a bit of an overview as to what happened that day. Now, there was a series of 4 coordinated terrorist attacks. They were launched by the Islamic group Al-Qaeda upon the United States, New York City, and Washington, D.C. And, of course, I mentioned Shanksville, Pennsylvania. That was late 93. This happened on Tuesday, September 11th in 2001. These attacks killed almost 3,000 people and cost at least $10 billion in property and infrastructure damage. 3,000 people died that day. Pardon me. These were people globally. It happened in the United States. Most of the victims were Americans, but casualties came as far away as Japan. We had casualties here in Canada, where I am. We felt this very, very personally. Of course, everybody did. Now, there were 4 passenger airliners that were hijacked. 2 of those planes, American Airlines Flight 11 and United Airlines Flight 175, crashed into the north and south towers of the World Trade Centers in New York City. And then within 2 hours, both towers collapsed with debris and the resulting fires causing partial or complete collapse of all other buildings in the World Trade Center complex. A 3rd plane, American Airlines Flight 77, crashed into the Pentagon. That is the headquarters of the United States Department of Defense, leading to a partial collapse in its western side. And the 4th plane, United Airlines Flight 93, it was targeted at Washington, D.C., but it crashed in a field because the passengers were apprised that it had been overtaken by hijackers. We all are familiar with Todd Beamer and his famous line, "Let's roll," and that they managed to deviate that away and save probably a couple of thousand more lives. The brave actions of civilians that day, Flight 93, is a glowing example of that. I am still in awe when I think about those events 13 years ago today. I remember where I was. I was in my kitchen. I had the rare day off. I rarely get a weekday off, and this is what is so amazing to me, is that I was enjoying my day. It was a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful sunny morning. It was so nice and warm out there. The sky was so blue. And I slept in until 8 o'clock. I slept in until 8 o'clock in the morning. I got up and I went into the kitchen. I had the little radio playing there. Didn't have a computer back then, folks. Had a little transistor radio. And I put that on, and I was in the kitchen making my morning coffee, and I was in my housecoat, enjoying, I got the day off. What am I going to do today? And they kept talking about this plane hitting some building, And I thought, oh, okay, well, yeah. Could be a small commuter plane. That happens all the time. But they kept talking about this big, huge skyscraper. But they kept going, and they kept going. And they started talking about what they were seeing on the monitor in the radio studio. So I thought, well, I guess I better turn on my TV and see what's going on. And then I did, and I saw hell unfold before my eyes. I was transfixed, and I saw the second plane hit live on the air, and I knew then that there was something afoot. Back then, I did not understand what Islam was. I did not understand the politics of Islam. I did not understand that they are capable of a true evil. I do now. And this is why we don't forget. And any Islamists out there, if you ever listen to this program, I've got two words for you. We win. We win. Because we don't forget either. Islamists have long memories. Well, so do we. I saw what unfolded, and then I became computer savvy, and I went to various sites, and I brushed myself up on what this entity called Islam is. And I now, as you know, host various radio programs centering around the issue of Islam. But we're not talking about Islam today. I just wanted to give you my personal backstory as to how I have developed, how this has changed me and shaped me into bringing to you what evil walks amongst us. But that was my experience. I didn't know what was going on back then. I did not understand why people wanted to harm us. I do now. It's frightening, and it's an ongoing battle. But you know what? We do. We will win. We win. What happened that day will never fade from anybody's memories, ever, because it is something. It is exactly what it is. It was a terrorist attack, and it killed hapless civilians. Not only on that day, but first responders were also taken from us via lingering illnesses. I had two friends they were New York firefighters. One was a former radio host, and you'll remember him as George's gin joint. I used to listen to his show every Friday afternoon, and he would let me cheat on the trivia questions and give me a T-shirt. It is personal to me. What I am proud of, though, is what Canada did, and Canada stood up to the plate in that, of course, when it was declared that there were terrorist attacks going on, all air traffic control were commanded to turn flights incoming into the United States around. Now, there were a lot of flights mid-air, some of them coming from Europe or Japan or China, and they were mid-flight. They could not turn around because they would run out of fuel. So what Canada did is that they opened up their airports in Victoria, British Columbia, and in St. John's, Newfoundland, and said, we'll take the flights, we'll take the flights. Now, some of these were very, very tiny airports that could only handle maybe 20 flights a day. All of a sudden, they were inundated with hundreds of flights coming in. But Canada stood up, and we took in these flights, and we housed these people for a week until the airs were cleared again and that these flights could resume their destinations. Canada... I'm proud of you, Canada. I'm proud of what you did that day and how you helped our fellow cousins, the United States, that day, in that you took in all these flights. People were opening their homes. I have a spare bedroom. You can stay here. How many of you? There's four of us. More than merrier, you're welcome. They had movie nights. They had potluck suppers. They had everything set up. I am very proud as a Canadian that we stepped in and we did what we did that day to help out. But otherwise, what would those flights have been? How would they turn around? How would they fly back? How many thousands of miles without even having so much as a tank of gas, as it were? So my contribution as a Canadian is that we did that day, and I am extremely proud of myself for this. I am grateful that you can be here today and listen to me speak with you about this. I'm going to play something here, and we'll see everybody back here in 4 minutes.
Three in the back. The cockpit's not answering. Somebody's stabbed in business class. And I think there's mates that we can't breathe. I don't know. I think we're getting hijacked. Which flight are you on? Flight 12.
And what seat are you in? Ma'am, are you there?
Yes.
What seat are you in?
Ma'am, what seat are you in? We just left Boston. We're up in the air. We're supposed to go to L.A., and the cockpit's not answering their phone.
Okay, but what seat are you sitting in? What's the number of your seat?
Okay, I'm in my jump seat right now.
Okay.
At 3R.
Okay, you're the flight attendant? I'm sorry, did you say you're the flight attendant?
Hello?
Yes,
hello?
What is your name?
I'm going to have to speak up. I can't hear you.
Sure. What is your name?
Okay, my name is Betty Ong. I'm number 3 on flight 11.
Okay.
And the cockpit is not answering their phone. And there's somebody staffed in business class, and we can't breathe in business class. Somebody's got mace or something.
Can you describe the person that you said someone is what in business class?
I'm sitting in the back. Somebody's coming back from business. If you can hold on for 1 second, sure. They're coming back. Our number one got stabbed. Our purser is stabbed. Nobody knows who stabbed who, and we can't even get up to business class right now because nobody can breathe. Our number one is stabbed right now.
Okay.
Our first class passengers, our first class galley flight attendant and our purser has been stabbed. And we can't get up to the cockpit. The door won't open. Hello?
Yeah, I'm taking down all the information. We're also, of course, recording this. At this point...
This is operations. What flight number are we talking about?
Flight 12.
Flight 12. Okay, no, we're on flight 11 right now. This is flight 11.
It's flight 11. I'm sorry, Nidhi.
Boston to Los Angeles.
Yes.
Our number one has been stabbed, and our five has been stabbed. Can anybody get up to the cockpit? Can anybody get up to the cockpit? Okay, we can't even get into the cockpit. We don't know who's up there.
Well, if they were shrewd, they would keep the door closed and...
I'm sorry?
Would they not mean the cockpit?
I think the guys are up there. They might have gone down their way up there or something. Nobody can call the cockpit. We can't even get inside.
Yes, we're still here.
Okay. I'm staying on the line as well.
Okay.
Hi, who is calling reservations? Is this one of the flight attendants or who are you, hon?
She gave her name as Betty Ong.
Betty, I'm number 3. I'm number 3 on this flight. And you're the number 3 on the flight? Yes.
And this is
flight
11? From where to where?
Flight 11.
Have you guys called anyone else?
No. Somebody's calling medical, and we can't get a phone.
And that was Betty Ong, and she was calling from one of the flights, and that was her last transmission. I'm going to pass the mic to Tim right now. He's going to relate his experiences and anything else he wants to do. Then we're going to take a bit of a break, and then we're going to take it to Dave. So, Tim, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Kel. When I think back to 9/11, I remember exactly where I was. I was out on site. I was working as a computer consultant for a customer who happened to have a TV channel, TV in the office, which was all of a sudden switched to show the World Trade Center and smoke coming out of it, and the announcer was talking about how there appeared to have been some sort of event. Nobody knew exactly what it was, but as we were watching, the second plane came in, and we actually saw it crash into the second tower. Well, there were about 20 or 30 of us in the office, and we just looked at each other in disbelief. Somebody said, that's got to be a terrorist event, which, okay, in hindsight, you might say, well, that's obvious. But, you know, at the time, it was quite prescient because, well, it was such a surprising thing to see on the screen. And the beauty of it didn't sink in for quite a while. But, yeah, it was a shocking thing for us all to sit in the office and to witness, but I remember it quite clearly as if it were yesterday. I don't have any first-hand knowledge or of people who died that day. I do know a couple of people who had friends who died on that day, but there's nobody I personally know firsthand. I guess that's a consequence of living, you know, virtually on the other side of the world. But I'm sure there'll be one or two people who are listening in today who will have had friends who they lost on that day. So rather than take up more of my time with my experiences, I'll pass the microphone back to you, Kel, and see if Dave would like to add to that, and perhaps there's somebody out there who'd like to call in as well.
Yeah, and we are taking calls, ladies and gentlemen. If you would like to dial in, the call-in number is 347-237-4318, or you can Skype in. The Skype button is at the top of the chat page. But, yes, I would like to bring Dave in right now. And hello, Dave. Welcome
hello,
back.
Kel. Thank you. I've got rather a long story, so, you know, if you want to take a break now, you can. But
I would like to hear your story.
Okay, all right. I appreciate it. This is how terror acts. It disrupts lives. And in your story, talking about just how your day was completely changed into a horror, is echoed by a lot of people. Mine began it was just as clear and beautiful and hot in Texas as it was in New York, and you know, it was an ordinary day. I was going to an eye doctor's office because I had had recent surgery and I wanted to, there were post surgical exams that I had to take, we were sitting in the office. I was talking to my brother about absolutely nothing, at least nothing that I can remember. This is something else. These events do tend to give you a bit of amnesia. And suddenly my brother said, well, hold on. And he got up and went to the counter where the receptionists were. They had a radio going, and it was playing the usual morning drive time program that you would expect, you know, music and chat and all that. But suddenly they start talking about how an airliner has run into one of the towers at the World Trade Center. And we thought, well, okay, that sucks. You know, must have been an accident. We didn't even think about it being a terrorist event. Unlike Tim, who, as I observed in the chat room, whose people were rather familiar with terrorist events at home due to the IRA. But these just, you know, didn't happen in the States. So I go into the exam, and there's more and more and more chatter going on outside between the receptionists, the other patients waiting, and all of this, to a point where the eye doctor got annoyed and got up from his examining chair and opened the door and said, you know, hey, can you guys keep it down out here? I'm trying to examine a patient. So we finish the exam, and we walk out, and we find out that, yes, a second plane has hit. And people are saying, all right, the Air Force had better get our planes in the air. We all pretty much realized at that point that we were under attack. Now, I had a special interest in this. Tim will be familiar with this company. It's called Sun Microsystems. Are you not familiar with them, Tim?
Yes, I'm familiar with Sun Microsystems.
Okay. I had a friend, my first real internet experience was using a dumb terminal on a Sun OS cluster at the University of Texas at Austin. And I had a lot of geeky friends like that, one of whom worked for Sun in New York, and their corporate headquarters was in the towers. Now, I didn't, and you know, I had spoken to her over what still is internet relay chat. We used to do this quite often, and there were even times I'd speak to her once in a while when she was at work. So I and everyone who used this chat channel that I did on internet relay chat knew that she was supposed to be working that day. So I instantly went into panic mode. And this has to be remembered. They were starting to experiment with consumer available wireless networks and things like that at that time. But it really none of it was really available on the consumer market. Pretty much, if you wanted to get on a computer and find out what happened, you had to go where you had a wired connection of some sort, either a direct cable connection or you had to have dial-up. And it was at least an hour and a half drive back to my home from my eye doctor's office. I was living in Texas at that time, and distances are long. We had to stop for something in Fry's Electronics, and it was everything my brother could do to keep me from going and throttling an employee and saying, okay, get me a Telnet connection now. I want to find out if my friend is okay. So we got out of there, and we finally got back home, and I got on the net as soon as I could and, you know, said, okay, where's Red? I'll just give her name as Red. And nobody knew. And this had been, this at that point was several hours, or not several hours, about 3 hours after the towers had collapsed. So no one knew. It took us until that evening. And again, this was an internet relay chat channel, so there were people from all over the world that were on there. We all knew each other. I mean, it was very much like the BTR community that we have here. So we were all concerned about her, and she finally came on and said she was okay. She was late for work that day, and she got off. Her train reached the platform, and she got out onto the street just in time to see the first tower fall. Ever since then, she has not quite been right. There were a lot of people that died on that day, but there were a lot of other people that were traumatized. And that really hasn't ended for a lot of people. I mean, those of us who haven't seen it can't imagine what it must be like to watch, you know, a couple of enormous skyscrapers come down right in front of them. She was saying she saw things like a man running past her that, you know, whose hair was on fire, and he stuck his head in a fountain to extinguish the flames. Since that time, she has never been quite the same. That is another one of the tolls that terror will take, is there are some people who simply cannot deal with the disasters that these monsters cause. And that is an ongoing issue with her, and all any of us can do is support her. I was very glad to hear that she was okay, but of course I was also saddened and angered at that point that this attack had occurred. And it just shows you how much we've advanced before and after. If this had been let's say last year, I could have probably found out instantly if she was okay. If this event had occurred 15 years before, there might not have even been any in-flight telephones. So the messages that got out from the plane that crashed in Pennsylvania might not have even gotten out. They might not have even known what was going on. And we might now be minus a Capitol building and minus the White House. We know that those were two targets that were being thought about. And all I can tell you was I ended that day as traumatized as everyone else was, but I knew that we had been attacked, and that nothing would be the same since. And Kel, I'll turn the mic back over to you.
And Dave, you brought up one good point about the emotional damage that they create, the psychological damage that they're capable of inflicting upon us in the West, because this was unlike anything we had ever witnessed on that day. Those two buildings, they were meant to stand forever, and to see them implode live on television. Well, I do know what it did to me. It affected me. It changed me. I grew into a resolve, though, thank goodness. I found an outlet, and thank goodness I found Blog Talk Radio, and I could do a little radio show, talk about some things, and purge myself of it. But there's a lot of walking wounded out there who don't have many outlets. Some of them are still harboring this with them. The memories of that day live in so many hearts of people. Islam has a lot to answer for, let's put it that way. But what we're going to do is we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back with another story. But I want to play this, and this is yet another song by the beautiful Colleen Gray. And let me see if I can bring it up. I've got it right here. We'll take a bit of a break, and we'll be right back, folks.
The dust is finally clear.
that's exactly what it was, folks, in the blink of an eye. And next thing you know, everything is gone. How did we allow this to happen? We can delve into the politics of what led up to this. But it's a moot point. 9/11 is all about what happened to the people. There were husbands and wives and sons and daughters getting on with their day, just going to work. And they were murdered. 3,000 civilians that day. And the fallout with the first responders later, years down the road. We don't care about the politics today. We're not interested in the politics. All we know is that cowards attacked the United States that day, and they murdered people. We are inundated with so many stories about 9/11, and if you're a conspiracy theorist, stay the hell away from Red Fox Blogger. We're not interested. All we care about today is that there's a lot of empty chairs around the dining room table today. There's a lot of children without a mother or a father because of the act of Islamic cowards. Exceptional. I can't even explain the exceptionalism of some of those people on that day. And I mentioned at the beginning of the program Todd Beamer, who was on United Airlines Flight 93, and as Dave said, was either destined for the Capitol or the White House. And if there were no phones in which they could transmit messages, they would never have known what was going on. They were getting phone calls saying that planes are flying into buildings. And then they realized that Flight 93 had been hijacked. By then, they were well clued in as to what was going on. So a group of people got together. And they said that we're going to do something about this. So they did. They stormed the cockpit, my apologies. And they drove it down into the ground in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Let's roll. It was a passenger revolt. The last words heard were, "Are you guys ready? Okay. Let's roll." Those were Todd Beamer's last words heard by operator Lisa Jefferson. On that flight, Edward felt he dialed 911 from his cell phone from the lavatory of the aircraft seeking information. His call was answered by dispatcher John Shaw, and Felt was able to tell him about the hijacking before the call was disconnected. C.C. Lyles called her husband once more from a cell phone and told him the passengers were forcing their way back into the cockpit. People were calling frantically. They were calling their loved ones, asking, "What is going on? What exactly is going on?" there was a cockpit voice recorder that captured the sounds of crashing, screaming, and the shattering of glass and plates. At one point, the plane was stabilized, but 5 seconds later, Mr. Girard asked, "What is that? Shall we finish it off?" Another hijacker responded, "No, not yet. When they all come, we finish it off." And I just mentioned one of the hijackers' names. And I apologize for that because I went out of my way to try to avoid doing that. But for the sake of this narrative, I thought it was important. There was a passenger in the background, and he cried in the cockpit, "Now, if we don't, we will die." This was at 10:25 a.m. 16 seconds later, another passenger yelled, "Roll it." And that was possibly referring to using the food cart to storm the cockpit. The voice recorder did not record the sound of the passengers using the food cart as a battering ram against the cockpit door. Now this hijacker, he ceased the violent maneuvers at 10:01 a.m. He recited the Takbir several times. Ladies and gentlemen, he was reciting out of that evil green book called the Quran, okay? The passengers continued their assault, and at 10:02, 23 seconds, a hijacker said, "Pull it down, pull it down." And the airplane descended with the yoke turned hard to the right. The airplane rolled onto its back, and one of the hijackers began shouting the Takbir. Now, amidst the continued sounds of the passenger counterattack, the aircraft picked up speed, whooshing and shrieking. That was picked up on the recorder, and then finally it plowed into an empty field in Pennsylvania. This is out of about 20 minutes flying out from Washington, D.C. The last entry on the voice recorder was made at 10:03, 09 seconds. The last piece of flight data was recorded at 10:03, 10 seconds. The 9/11 Commission report concluded that the hijackers remained at the controls but must have judged that the passengers were only seconds from overcoming them. Some of the passengers' family members, having heard the audio recordings, believed that the passengers breached the cockpit and killed at least one of the hijackers guarding the cockpit door. Some interpreted the audio as suggesting that both the passengers and the hijackers struggled to control the yoke. We have heroes on this day, and Flight 93 is certainly a shining example of that. Because if these people had not done on that flight what they did, they knew that they were going to die. But they also knew that they were not going to allow that aircraft to fly into yet another building and kill more lives. In the blink of an eye, all you do, you're going about your business, you're boarding your flight, you got to get to San Francisco to close that deal, or you're off to see your parents. And this happens. And your loved ones are on the ground, and they can hear every sound. The last moments of your life. In the blink of an eye. I'm going to pass the mic to Tim now. I want to ask you, Tim, when you have been dealing with the counter jihad movement for a very, very, very long time, and was 9/11 a big motivator for you?
Yeah, without a doubt. Before 9/11, I hadn't really given much thought to Islam at all. I'd run a company and employed several Muslims and thought nothing of it whatsoever, apart from the fact it was actually quite difficult to motivate them. And at any one time, I'd had three Muslims on the payroll, and at any one time there was always one missing because he had to go off and help his uncle do something. And it was very difficult to try and instill the concept of loyalty into these characters, but I didn't really think of anything. I certainly didn't think of it as anything malignant in the way that I would today. I've got a completely different view of Islam and of those who subscribe, willingly subscribe to Islam, that I did have back before the days of 9/11. And 9/11 happened. It gave me pause for thought. You know, I didn't particularly associate it with any immediate change in my attitude towards Muslims. That only really happened a couple of years later, when I started to delve into the motivation behind 9/11 in more detail, and I came across writings by various counter-jihad authors, in particular Robert Spencer. I started to read his books, and all of a sudden it all made sense. It all fell into place, because I was asking myself the questions that I'm sure a lot of people would have asked themselves around about that sort of time. You know, how could anybody fly planes into buildings, you know, and expect something good to come out of it? And I probably ask myself the same questions that most people, most people with a Western mindset would have asked themselves at that time. But when I started to read Robert Spencer's writings on the subject, it all started to make perfect sense. I mean, almost instantly, when I started to read read his books and some of the things he was writing on a recently he'd only recently started to write on Jihad Watch, the blog that I've been following pretty much every day since then. But almost as soon as I started to read, everything fell into place and it all made perfect sense. And once you understand the arguments that Robert Spencer and there are other writers. For me, he was my main guiding light in understanding what Islam was all about and why we were seeing what we were seeing when all of our political elites were saying Islam is a religion of peace, it's benign and tolerant, perfectly compatible with Western civilization and our cherished notions of freedom and democracy. All our political leaders, pretty much without exception, back at that time, that's what they were saying. George Bush, in particular, stood up and told the American people a day or two after 9/11 that Islam was a religion of peace. And it sets up cognitive dissonance, because you see what's happened, you understand that Muslims were involved, and yet you're being told that Islam is a religion of peace. So how can all these things make sense in your mind when that's what you're being told? And when you realize that, in fact, you're being told that you're being told about Islam from an official point of view is a lie, then it all starts to make perfect sense. And that's what Robert Spencer did for me, and that's why I've always had such high regard for Robert Spencer, because he's never, as far as I can tell, ever told a lie or spread misinformation about Islam. Said he can back up from Islamic sources, and he does painstakingly do that in order to counter people who try to slander him. So When you understand where he's coming from, and he draws a picture for you that is not difficult for a lay person to understand if they take a little bit of time, do a little bit of research. When you start to see these things fall into place, then you all of a sudden you the problem is much, much bigger than was originally thought. Or, well, not than was originally thought, but that you personally might have originally thought, that it was just you fanatics distorting the teachings of Islam to fly planes into buildings. Well, no, it's all part and parcel of the global jihad, as we need to understand. And it's all driven by Islamic ideology, as we have come to understand. But if it weren't for people like Robert Spencer and all the other counter-jihad investigators that have painstakingly delved into this over the past 13 years, and obviously some of them were writing about this kind of thing even before 9/11, if it hadn't been for them, then we, most of us, might still be continuing in a state of blissful ignorance, completely realize that the Islamic ideology is driving all this, and we'd be looking at all the things that are happening around the world now, and we wouldn't be connecting the dots. I mean, now we are connecting the dots. We're looking at nearly 25,000 fatal attacks around the world by Muslims in the name of Islam since 9/11, and we can see that there is a pattern that connects them all. And if it weren't for people like Robert Spencer, then we might not see that pattern. So certainly for me, 9/11 was a defining moment in my life, and I realized that everything that I'd experienced up until that time, everything I'd been told about Islam, was a complete lie, and that it was my duty to spread the truth about the nature of the danger that it poses to not just Western civilization, but humanity as a whole. Is the enemy of humanity. It's not just the enemy of Western civilization. Now, in my view, there is no more important message that you could possibly get out to the rest of the world than that, because if we don't solve this problem with Islam, very little else is going to matter for our children, our grandchildren, and their descendants for the next 1,000 years. So we have to solve this problem. And it's going to require a lot more than politicians just telling us that we ought to be able to just get along together, and telling us that we shouldn't discriminate against Muslims, how they're just like the rest of us. Well, no, they're not. They follow alien and hostile ideology that is the enemy of humanity. And I'm not exaggerating. I choose my words very carefully. When I say it's the enemy of humanity, I mean it's the enemy of all that is good and beautiful and truthful. Everything that Muslims tell you about Islam is based on lies and deceit, and they have been using lies and deceit for the past 1,400 years to fool generations of non-Muslims into thinking that it is a peaceful, benign, and tolerant religion, similar, they would tell you, to Judaism, Christianity, and other world religions, when it's nothing of the sort. Now, people who are listening tonight who listen to our other radio shows will recognize the argument we're putting forward. And I'm not going to go into it in great detail, because I want tonight, as you do, Kel, to be a memorial to the people who died on 9/11. But it's still important to remind everybody what it was that was behind the events that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just giving you a little bit of background, giving our listeners a little bit of background of how it for me personally. And with that, I'll pass the mic back to you.
Well, you bring up some very good points, and we do have a caller joining us. I'll bring him on in a moment, but I want to pass the mic to Dave, and that I wonder, Dave, how did this happen? There were so many warning signs. These were exchange students. They were traveling on visas, and I understand that some of them were taking courses in Florida, flight courses, and that they wanted to learn how to take off a plane, but they weren't interested on how to land a plane. And the flight instructor, he actually got in touch with, I believe it was the FBI, and said, look, I've got a group of Middle Easterners here that are taking flight courses, but they don't want to finish the course. They just want to know how to take off a plane and how to fly it, and they're not interested in how to land it. Should I be concerned? And I'm going to file with you my formal concern. And the FBI ignored it. I believe it was the FBI, because I don't think the CIA would have been, I think it's through the FBI that the CIA would have been apprised, but I believe he did contact the FBI, and they said, nah, don't worry about it, and that's what happened. So what happened there, Dave, it would be the FBI. And there was a lack of communication, and after 9/11 Commission report, when it came out, they did declare that there was no cross-referencing. There was no sharing of files. It's almost like every agency was hugging their little files to their chest, saying, no, you can't see, you can't see. I believe after the 9/11 Commission, that changed. But, Agador, do you see any improvement in the United States in terms of surveillance at this point, or is it we're going to have to live with the lack of profiling?
Well, when you talk about this, you talk about a nation asleep, which is what we were, and we should have seen the signs. I mean, we saw glimpses of this in 1972, back when I didn't even know what a terrorist was, and the Israeli athletes were killed in the Olympics in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
We saw Americans were very frustrated in 1979. When our hostages, when our people and our embassy were taken hostage and held for over 400 days,
mm-hmm.
we should have thought about that then as a nation. But we went back to sleep. We woke up briefly, but then we went right back to sleep because our politicians were saying exactly what Tim says, that these people are, they don't represent Islam. Islam is a peaceful religion. These people are just some random nutbags that, you know, use Islam as an excuse for terror. We should have woken up when the Marine barracks in Beirut were destroyed. We should have woken up after the Achille Lauro incident. But there were two things in operation at that time, and one of them is still in operation. One of them is that Americans and Westerners, I think in general, do tend to have a short attention span when it comes to this. If attacks like this aren't ongoing, then we tend to stop paying attention after a while and go on with our lives. There's that one. And then there's what is in Americans in particular and Westerners in general, which is we are trying to be post-racial, not to use the leftist post-racial argument, what they get a lot out of. But real post-racialism, we as a people don't like to look at someone of a different color or of a different nationality or a different creed or whatever and say, all right, we have to discriminate against these people because they might be dangerous, because that smacks to us of racism. And this is something that is abhorrent to us as Westerners. So it's very difficult for us to get our head around doing the things that Tim is talking about, and taking the measures that I talked about in my last show. These kinds of things make us feel dirty as Westerners, because this isn't the way things should be. And would that it were true, but as we know, it is not. There actually are people of a certain quote-unquote religion that want to do us harm. Now, you were talking, and we have to do something about that, even though it goes against that that humanist grain that we have as Westerners. Now, you were talking about the sharing of information, and when you did, I was actually reminded there were some people from Washington were flying out to kind of do a post-mortem, so to speak, on the Achille Lauro incident, trying to fly out. This was either immediately after it had occurred or while it was occurring. And these were people from various agencies from Washington, and they actually got into a physical fight over who would be in charge or some other kind of minutia. And this is grown men going at each other with fists from different agencies in the American government. And this was part of the reason for the formation of Homeland Security. And there have been a lot of political implications since then as to how much of this spying Homeland Security should do on our own people, how much they should do as far as foreign nationals go, and how much safer we are. Have the changes that were made us any safer as Americans? And I have to conclude by saying that no, I don't think that we are safer as Americans. I think we've created a new bureaucracy to oversee the other bureaucracies. But until we get it into our heads that, unlike the president said last night, ISIS, for instance, is the true face of Islam, that the true face of Islam was represented in 1972 in Munich. It was represented in 1979 in Tehran. It was represented in Beirut and with the Achille Lauro and on 9/11. We're not going to move much further forward. But I think the good news is that more and more people are beginning to find these bloggers. They're beginning to find things like Pamela Geller's website. They're beginning to find things like Jihad Watch. They're beginning to find things like our program and the programs put out by people such as Vito Esposito, who is in our chat room right now.
Gotti Edelman.
Gotti Edelman, who is just a wonderful source for information about Islam. Usama Dakdak, one of the best. People are beginning to find these out, and through them, I think more than through our own intelligence agencies, I think is going to come the answers to this problem. And I will turn the mic back to you.
You cite very, very wonderful radio personalities that do bring the truth. And as a matter of fact, one of them is gracing our chat room, and that is Vito Esposito. And he and Al are the proprietors of the Radio Jihad Network. And you listen to their show Monday at 6 p.m. Al and Vito will certainly educate you. You mentioned Usama Dakdak. He's also on the Radio Jihad Network at 10 p.m. Saturday evenings Eastern Time. These are fine people. We got wonderful people out there. Dr. Bill Warner, as Tim mentioned, Robert Spencer. One of my personal favorites, of course, is Tim Burton. not just little lies there.
You're too kind. You're too kind. Such a charmer.
Like when you listened to these fine gentlemen speak and fine ladies speak too, like Pamela Geller, and like there are so many voices out there. We have Luchadora gracing our chat room too. Listen to her; she's a wealth of knowledge. Listen to her on the Radio Jihad Network on Wednesdays at MP91 Freedom Quest, where she co-hosts with Eliza Jane, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Yes, I'm doing plugs because Tim and I, we're also part of the Radio Jihad Network family. We're Tuesdays at 6 p.m. But we do. Everybody that I think that where we're going with the knowledge that we impart is not coming from the mainstream media. It's coming from us, and we cross-reference everything, everything. And we don't blow sunshine, people. We tell you the truth. But today we are talking about 9/11 and the devastation 13 years later. I would like to bring on our caller, and that is Michael. And hi, Michael. How are you today?
Hey, Kel. And a big hello to Tim.
Hello, Michael. And good to hear you, mate.
Yes. It's great to listen to you and hear your voice. And Agador?
And Dave's here, too.
Hello, Michael.
Yeah.
How are you?
Good,
so
thank you.
The whole gang's here. That's tremendous. I've been listening to the program, and it's outstanding. Kel, I have to tell you that some of the things you were reading were so moving and powerful, and it just brought back these vivid images that I have in my head from being in New York City on that day. And
you
like
are a resident of New York State, but you are like 20 minutes away from downtown New York City. You were there that day, Michael. What happened? Like what did, like in terms of your eyes, what happened? What did you see? How did you feel?
Well, I was preparing to go to a business I had at the time, and I got a call from one of the employees that something had happened down in the World Trade Center. And I thought he was joking. I didn't take him seriously. I thought it was he was just kind of being a practical joker. And he kept urging me to turn on a TV or radio. And subsequently I did. Actually, I turned on a radio, and I heard coming over the airwaves the broadcast of what had started to unfold and ensue down there was the first tower that was hit. Just a complete state of disbelief. And not knowing many facts at that time, no one really knew what was happening. Took a little while, and of course we understood it was a terrorist attack of a magnitude unparalleled in the history of the world of modern-day Western civilization, certainly in the history of America.
Yeah.
I was scheduled to go downtown to that area to go to a company called Morgan Stanley in the Trade Center to bring something. It was canceled, or it wasn't, you know, it didn't happen. Thank God, of course, that I wasn't down in that exact location. Many of my vivid memories would be of the smoke rising up from that site, you know, this massive amount of smoke and this smell, you know, very pungent and strong smell coming from there as the, of course, after the towers fell and everything was smoldering and it went on for months. And the sight of people walking covered in soot and, you know, all the debris that had fallen, it was covered on their clothes, many of them business people, and looking exhausted and, of course, in a state of shock because everybody had to walk from downtown Manhattan. You know, everything was shut down. The city was on lockdown, and you couldn't get on a subway, and there was no traffic, no cars or anything. One of the most powerful memories I have is that night living in the heart of New York City, and I went out at midnight to walk my dog, and it was, you could have heard a pin drop. It was dead silence. It was eerie. It was something you never forget. New York City, you know, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, no matter what time of the day or morning, there's activity. And it was at a complete standstill. It was silent.
silence.
Absolute silence.
You were there that day. Yeah. You saw a lot that a lot of us will never experience. The sounds, the smells, the devastation, and then just complete silence. Wow. How does this affect you to this day, Michael?
It's powerful, you know. It's something that will never leave you. And just sitting here talking about it, it kind of affects me. It's heartbreaking, the loss of life that that took place that day. And I'll relay another experience. I was traveling downtown. This is after the attack, not too many days after. There's a big armory in New York City. And on the adjoining buildings to this armory, because the armory was a place where people would go to inquire about their loved ones and get information, pictures of thousands of people who were in those towers and in the area, you know, those who were missing, with their name, were posted on a building, actually two buildings. And there were memorials established, and people would come and, you know, light candles and leave different mementos and things. And but anyway, I was in a cab, and it was about dusk, and the sun had gone down. And I asked the cab driver to pull over. I didn't need to get out. Actually, I needed to go further, but the sight of these two buildings with all these pictures of these people just captivated me. And I got out of the cab, and I walked over and just started to read the names of some of these people who, you know, we knew were would never be found, of course.
Yeah.
So that's another kind of very vivid memory I have of what happened 13 years ago to this date.
We're going to play another clip in a moment, but before we do that, I have a final question for you during this segment, Michael. And how do you think New York City today, does this still resonate, or have they moved on? Are they back to sleep, especially in light of your new mayor?
Much of the country has moved on. People moved on years ago, tragically. This horrific attack united America. There was true patriotism. There was a sense of unity, of purpose, purpose to go to war and to find those responsible and kill them.
Mm-hmm.
But no, sadly, and all over Europe, I mean, Tim would probably attest that the 9/11 that they had in the U.K.
Yeah, there's 7/7.
Yeah, if it's not right in front of you, and if it doesn't kind of affect your life after a certain length of time, tragically people forget, and it's not in their consciousness. They're not thinking about it. One thing I have to say is that it was the defining moment that we went to war. It's not just the loss of life on that day, of course, the first responders and the civilians, but look at all the sacrifices that's been made by our respective militaries.
Mm-hmm.
And enormous sacrifice. And are we any safer now? And tragically, we're not. We're actually at more risk for other attacks, possibly more catastrophic, for all the reasons we know, weak political decisions. The unwillingness to utterly destroy the enemy, the unwillingness to stay firm and resolved and to continue the fight.
And that is what I wish that everybody would do, and that it would resonate with people, that we are dealing with an entity. We are dealing with something. Like they're capable of such a kinetic. Our devastation is unbelievable. I can't fathom why people, like you say, Michael, are back to falling asleep. I'm reading these stories that are global and the devastation that this entity is capable of. And it breaks my heart that we don't have enough voices, it seems, to apprise. We're not alarmists, but we're apprisers. And if we can reach one or two ears with every show, that's great. But we need to be a collective. We do not engage in groupthink, but we can act as a collective, and we have to stand up to this. We have to ensure that something as devastating as 9/11 ever happens again. But you know, I have something here in particular. I think you'll enjoy this clip, Michael. We lost close to 3,000 lives that day, 2,977 that day alone. We are always thinking of those that succumbed to the scourge that attacked those World Trade Centers and the Pentagon and Shanksville, Pennsylvania that day. But we ensure that they never walk alone. I'm going to play this clip right now, and this is courtesy of Cap Horn. Thank you, Cap, for sending this to me.
Say you'll never forget where you were when you heard the news on September 11th, 2001. Neither will I. I was on the 110th floor in a smoke-filled room with a man who called his wife to say goodbye. I held his fingers steady as he dialed. I gave him the peace to say, "Honey, I'm not going to make it. But it's okay. I'm ready to go." I was with his wife when he called as she fed breakfast to their children. I held her up as she tried to understand his words. And as she realized he wasn't coming home that night, I was in the stairwell of the 23rd floor when a woman cried out to me for help. "I've been knocking on the door of your heart for 50 years. I said, "Of course, I'll show you the way home. Only believe in me now." I was at the base of the building when the priest ministered to the injured and devastated souls. I took him home to tend his flock in heaven. He heard my voice and answered. I was on all four of those planes, in every seat, with every prayer. I was with the crew as they were overtaken. I was in the very hearts of the believers there, comforting and assuring them that their faith has saved them. I was in Texas, Kansas, London. I was standing next to you when you heard the terrible news. Did you sense me? I want you to know that I saw every face. I knew every name, though not all know me. Some met me for the first time on the 86th floor. Some sought me with their last breath. Some couldn't hear me calling to them through the smoke and flames. "Come to me, this way," Take my hand. Some chose, for the final time, to ignore me. But I was there. I did not place you in the tower that day. You may not know why, but I do. However, if you were there in that explosive moment in time, would you have reached for me? September 11th, 2001 was not the end of the journey for you. But someday your journey will end, and I'll be there for you as well. Seek me now while I may be found. Then, at any moment, you know you're ready to go. I will be in the stairwell of your final moments. Remember, I love you.
And now I would like to offer up a prayer in memory of the victims of September 11th. Eternal God, source and creator of life, from the depths we have called to you, and we call to you again for courage, strength, and wisdom on this 10-year anniversary of our nation's tragedy. This was written 3 years ago, folks. Grant us courage to confront our enemies. Comfort those who stand alone without spouse, parent, brother, sister, or friend. Open our hearts to them and to the children orphaned 10 years ago today. Enable us to love more deeply all children who suffer. Accept with mercy our prayers of healing on behalf of the families of the victims and on behalf of the first responders who came ill at Ground Zero. Despite the horror and tragedy of 9/11, our country remains a shelter of peace, a symbol of freedom, a beacon light of compassion and justice to the downtrodden and oppressed of the world. Strengthen the hands of our people to defend this country and our common values of freedom and justice. Inspire our leaders and diplomats to act wisely and pursue peace everywhere in the world. May we teach our children to learn and to think, to consider and to reason, to be courageous in thought and in deed, and nurture hearts of wisdom, that they may battle against fear, hatred, bigotry, using weapons of the spirit and loving hearts. We offer our prayers on behalf of our country and government, our president and judiciary, our officials and institutions, our soldiers and citizens, upon all who faithfully toll for the good of our country, to preserve democracy in our land, and to advocate for civility between adversaries, and to treat every human being as infinitely worth and worthy and dignified by virtue of being created. Bestow upon us the blessings of peace, and may we live to see the day when sword will be converted into plowshares and nations will not learn war anymore. Amen. And I think I'm going to pass the mic to Tim.
Oh, thank you, Kel. That was very moving indeed. And yeah, maybe there will come a day when swords will be converted into plowshares, but I have to say that day is not yet. My concern is that we're being told to convert our swords into plowshares before we've actually reached the point of all our enemies. I don't wish to be flippant on a day like this, but our political elites have spent a lot of the time over the past 13 years, telling us how this is nothing to do with Islam and that we should all just get along together. Well, I think we should all just get along together. The only problem is, of course, that Islam will not allow it, and we should never forget that. And if we lay down our swords and turn them into plowshares and they don't get the memo, that is to say, Muslims don't get the memo about doing the same thing, we're in for a lot of trouble. So I think we ought to all reflect on what we're being told, the messages that are coming out from our political elites on a day like today, and we ought to resolve that we have got a big fight ahead of us, and we are going to have to fight. We're going to have to put down those plowshares for the time being and pick up swords, metaphorically speaking. We're going to have to fight our way through to the state of affairs that we actually want to exist, which is people living side by side all around the world in peace and harmony. But it will not happen while Islam is on the planet. And that's just something we all wish it wasn't the case. I'm quite sure everybody listening here tonight wishes that that were not the case. But unfortunately, it is the case. So when a day like September the 11th comes around, I think we should all remember it is, on the hand, it's a time for thinking about the sacrifices that were made on 9/11/2001. It's also a time for thinking about the sacrifices that we're going to have to make for our children and grandchildren, because this is such an important, it's a turning point really in the development of humanity. People will look back in years to come and they'll say, well, 9/11 was a terrible event, but it made a difference to the way that people looked at things, especially the way a few informed counter-jihadists galvanized the rest of the world into taking action against possibly the biggest evil that has ever existed on the planet. So I hate to use the phrase, maybe there's a silver lining to a cloud which has affected so many people, but I think we all have a duty to do what we can for the sake not only of everybody who's currently living today, but for future generations unborn. So that's all I wanted to say, Kel. So I'm passing the mic back.
Thank you, Tim. We still have Michael with us, and I'll bring him on in a moment, but I wanted to pass the mic to Dave, and if there's anything that we have learned, Dave, what did we learn from 9/11? Like, I know we talked about, you know, the populace went back to sleep again, but if we keep these stories alive, if we keep these memorials alive, do you think that we could possibly make an impact? I mean, we have to touch the human soul, I believe, and I'm only one person. I can only do so much. But you're another person, and you can only do so much. But as a group, we can do much more. Do you think that we will make a difference? Do you think that we'll see a conclusion to the scourge, and that we will oust them from our Western homes once and for all down the road? What do you think, Dave?
Well, first thing I want to do is to say thank you for playing that clip, because that's one that I wanted that I was thinking of, that I wanted to play for the show, and I couldn't think of it. So thank you for playing that. I had to get a tear out of the eye, I have to tell you, and for the prayer. Yes, we're going to have to be together in strength to deal with this, while we remember those who have fallen. To go to Tim's point about this attack, the 9/11 attack, I'd just like to say that while many of the rest of the nation went back to sleep, and part of this was due to our leaders, it did wake up a core of people that weren't already awake. I'll say again that people like Gotti Edelman had been trying to warn people for years before this event occurred, and not a lot of people were listening. And he didn't have very many outlets. But 9/11 caused a lot of people to wake up and take more of an interest in this thing called Islam. And it caused them to begin to work. Robert Spencer, Tim mentioned, and Pamela Geller later on, and many of these other people. If the rest of the nation has gone to sleep and is continuing to be narcotized by our succeeding administrations, that core of people has been quietly working in the background, and the number of people is beginning to grow who are prepared to say that there is a problem. It's a larger problem with Islam, and it is something that we are going to have to wrap our minds around and determine ourselves to do something about. You do hate to say a silver lining in such a horrific attack, but events cause events, and events move trends, and this one, I think, created much of the counter-jihad movement now that exists in the Western world. And though I wish it could have been done with less pain, the results of the work that the counter-jihad movement is doing now, if nothing else, just waking people up, could be that Islam could be pushed back into its dirty little hole in the Middle East where it began, and Western civilization might actually wake up and stay awake.
Yeah.
To the danger that it poses to all of us, to the dangers that it poses to civilization as a whole, because this is a world war, and that began on 9/11. And I say it's a world war because there's literally no place on the planet now, aside from maybe Antarctica, that Islam has not touched. It's all over Africa. It's all over Asia, including China and Indochina, what we used to call Indochina, the Pacific Islands, Europe, of course. It's in South America. We know it's in Central America, and it is, of course, in Canada and the United States. There is no place that it is not touching now with its evil fingers. And what may stop that scourge, what will certainly stop that scourge in the end, is going to be a core of people, some of whom were awake before 9/11, and many of whom woke up after 9/11 and began asking questions of our leaders and began digging into this thing called Islam. I like to say in my shows, the Unpleasant Blind Guy, that we've already won. And I believe this to be true. It is just a matter of getting through the dark time that is to come for us to realize that stage where, as you said, Kel, we do win. We win. And as an American, I want to say to any Islamist listening to this that thinks you can weasel your way into our nation and take our Constitution and overwhelm it with your evil green book. No, you will not do that. And even if you manage to, there will be some of us, there will always be some of us that will remember that Constitution will not die. You think we own the clocks, but you own the time? No, no, no.
Yeah.
Because there's evil and there's freedom. And those who will win in the counter-jihad movement, no freedom. And I'll turn it back to you.
I'm going to play another song, and when we come back, I would like Michael Green is still joining us. I would like him to put something in. We're going to wrap it down in about 20 minutes, but I want to play this song. We'll see everybody back here in 4 minutes. Once again, this is from the beautiful Colleen Gray. To the lyrics of that song, and you assume it's about lovers breaking up, but no, I read much more into that song, and what it resonated with me is that you cherish everything and everybody that you have about you. And never, ever, ever walk away mad. Never storm out that door. Never have a bad day. Never, ever neglect those that are so close to you, because it could be the end very soon. Do not get angry with those who love you, your family, your husband, your wife, your child. You cherish every moment that you have with them. That's how that song resonated with me. And Michael is still joining us. And Michael, I want to ask you, do you have any thoughts about, look at me getting all weepy again. But Michael, I want to ask you, yeah, in particular that song, like when you listen to the lyrics of that particular song, we have interpreted it in a different way, but it's true. We have to cherish every day that we have, and we have to wake up every morning with fresh eyes, don't you think?
Our God, our Creator, has given us this precious gift. It's called life. And we need to be most grateful. We need to be eternally grateful for the things we have in this life. I mean the simple things, the small blessings, you know, the embrace of a loved one, the time we spend with our friends, you know, a cool breeze on a hot summer day, the snow and the frost in the winter, the leaves turning colors in the autumn. You know, you wake up today, and if you have your health, and maybe if you don't have 100% of your health, but if you are able to do something for another human being, to give something back to others that are in need, to try to make a difference, you know, while we walk this earth, from the time we live and the time we die, to contribute something worthwhile to this world that's filled with violence, wickedness, evil, greed, just a lot of darkness today. We're in a bad time. Through God and our Savior Jesus Christ, I firmly believe we can overcome many things, and we can have a lot of peace and strength, because we need to be strong. We have an enemy that is determined to wage war on us continually, and there'll be no end in sight that I see to this battle for a very long time. It's going to continue. I want to say one other thing, because I know the clock is ticking. Today is a solemn day. It's a day that we will reflect on these lives that were cut short. People just like any of us sitting on this program today, who got up, went to work, did what they had to do, and didn't make it home. Lots of heartache and sorrow. Many tears flowed in this nation on 9/11. We pray for God's blessings and comfort still to this day for those who've lost someone they love. We pray for the people who went to war. They went off to Iraq and Afghanistan. They didn't make it home from the battlefield. In those homes, there's an empty chair at a table where a mother's son is not there, their daughter. Very difficult stuff. I know many Gold Star families that have lost members, you know, who fought in the past 10 years. These wounded warriors who I've been so blessed to be around, get to know, develop friendships with, incredible people, you know, the ones that bear these scars of war that are visible, the unseen scars of war that, you know, never leave your mind, they stay in your heart. We'll think of them today. We'll think of the sacrifices they made to physically go fight this enemy, this scourge.
And thank you, Michael, for that. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you so very much. I'm going to pass the mic to Dave now. We are down to our last few minutes. Dave, do you have any parting thoughts?
Well, first of all, Kel, thank you very much for getting everything together for the show. And I know we made some suggestions and things here and there, but you did most of the heavy lifting for this. And as an American, I want to tell you that I love you dearly for what you've put together. And As always, it's a pleasure to work with Tim Burton. I just want to say that I think that it is very awesome that there are British patriots who every year go to the American Embassy in London and stand vigil. I want to recognize them and all the love that we do get from around the world. Sometimes as Americans, we tend to forget that there are patriots there around the world. There are people around the world who know this scourge of Islam and who stood with us on 9/11 in empathy for the people we lost. And I want to recognize them and more, or rather also, I want to recognize all of those who stand watch now for us in our military and our first responders, all of them who do the day-to-day work to keep us safe. And I'm wishing all good safety to them and to all of us in the anti-jihad movement and all Americans on this anniversary of 9/11. And I will turn it back to you. Thank you, Kel.
Thank you, Dave. And Tim, your parting thoughts before we close out the show.
Yeah, thanks, Kel. Well, I want to echo Dave's words and to say thank you for everything you've done to put the show together. And thanks to everybody who's listening. It's been a very moving show, I have to say, and it's given us all, certainly given me, pause for thought, because it's not just about remembering those who died on that day. It's remembering the bigger picture, or looking at reminding ourselves of the bigger picture, and how much more we still have to do before we can say we've done everything that needs to be done to hand the mantle on to our children and grandchildren. I mean, hopefully, because of what we're doing, and every time we have a show like this, it reminds me of how important it is that the work that we do. I'm not just talking about you and me and Dave, but I'm talking about everybody in the county and everybody who's listening tonight and who's motivated to go out and talk to friends, colleagues, relatives who may not know very much about Islam and get them on to awareness. Every time we have a show like this, and it's another opportunity to remind ourselves of exactly how important it is. This is a fight that we absolutely must win. There's no greater fight, in my view, that to be undertaken at this time in human history. So thank you, Kel, for being a part of that and making it happen. And thanks to everybody else who's listening and who's taken part.
Thank you to all of you fine gentlemen tonight. Of course, they're my fellow hosts, and that's Tim Burton and Dave Milner. Michael Green joined us this evening as well. We've had people in the chat room that joined us, and we appreciate that. We've had Luchadora, Ken of the Exceptional Conservative, Vito Esposito, Moving Forward, and various people popping in and out. We appreciate that you spent time with us. I am going to impart my final words, and we cannot forget one segment of this tragedy, and that is the first responders. They were there on the scene. They were there right away. We lost so many of our police, our firefighters, our ambulatory workers. We lost so many people that day, and we lost them subsequently due to prolonged illness. I mentioned at the beginning of the program my friend George of George's Gin Joint, who would allow me to cheat on trivia so I could win a T-shirt. We are going to close out the program, though, and that this is a prayer for the first responders. May their dedication to protecting life serve as a shining lamp of love, and the works of their hands bring us all merit in heaven. Bless the souls of all who have died to save others, civilians and professionals, the trained and the untrained, in every age, in every land. Men and women who answered the call of honor, duty, and service. May their memories be sanctified with joy and love. May their souls be bound up with the bond of life, a living blessing in our midst. So thank you. That is for the first responders on 9/11. Gentlemen, I want to thank you very, very much. And I have a closing song here. And this is a tribute to the first responders. Have a great evening, everybody, if you can, on this somber day. It has been a tough show to do. I'm like Holger and Vito. This is the one show once a year that I really find tough to do, as you probably witnessed a few times. It's tough. It's 13 years later, and I still remember exactly what I was doing, where I was, what I was wearing, what the weather was like, the time of day, and my cat coming around, curling around my ankle, looking for her foodies. I remember that day. You'd never, ever forget, and please never forget. Please share this with your children and remember exactly what we're up against, because it is far worse today. It's going to get far worse, I suspect. But you know what? We don't have to get into the politics of this. All we can do is remember. Remember those 3,000 lives lost and subsequent lives lost due to fallout. Remember the first responders. Remember those fire engines that you see in slides that were literally crushed by the implosion of the World Trade Centers. And remember those that were leaping out of buildings because they were burning alive. Remember that. These were hapless civilians on their way to work one morning. Remember that song by Colleen Gray, "Is This the End Now?" Yeah, it can be. It can be in a short moment. I thank you all very much. And good night, Tim. And good night, Dave. And good night, Michael.
Yeah, good night, Kel. Good night, everybody.
Good night, Kel. Good night, Tim.
This song is dedicated to the first responders. Oops, slow startup. Here we go.
Love grows.
And I love you, sweet Sue from New Mexico. Thank you so much for being my anchor tonight. Good night, everybody.
Good night, Kel.
Good night, Kel. Good night, Dave.